This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the New England Magic Collectors Association, that's NEMCA, that's going to be presenting their 2022 Yankee Gathering coming up November the 3rd through the 5th in Westboro, Massachusetts. This is one of those collectors events that you don't want to miss and is held annually up there in Massachusetts, and I know that you will enjoy it. For more information, be sure to stay tuned to the middle of this podcast. We will have one of the organizers to chat with us to tell you a bit more about who's going to be performing and a little bit about the convention itself and why you should consider attending this convention in November. Well, this week's episode is going to be featuring a magician who is knocking it out of the park every night. He's packing a 1,200-seat theater night after night in Branson, Missouri. His name is Reza, and if you're wondering who is Reza, well, it's because you haven't been to Branson in a while, if ever. I know that's not necessarily the entertainment capital of the world, the way that Las Vegas is, and in that regard, you have to wonder, well, why did he decide to go to Branson instead of going on to Las Vegas? Well, that's a common question that Reza has to answer, and he is asked that question in this episode then as well. But he has been around for a while, and not only does he stay in Branson and perform there in a theater, but also he does tour around the country as well as the world, and it works in major stadiums and packed houses around the country, as well as doing a lot of television shows as well. And so you may have seen him on TV, but if you haven't had a chance to see him live, I recommend that you go to Branson and see this, just a outstanding electric performer. He really gets the crowd up and on his feet. What I think is interesting about what Reza is doing is he is changing the landscape of entertainment in Branson. He is appealing to the younger demographic who is starting to define the 7 million tourists who come to Branson each year. A lot of the people who have been coming over the years have been an older generation, and as they have stopped coming, they did bring their children, and now those children have their own children, and they're looking for something young and new to do, and Reza is meeting that void. And in this particular episode this week, Reza talks to us a lot about not only why he is in Branson, but also about how he got there from South Dakota, as well as some of the obstacles one might face if you're planning to go to Branson, thinking, hey, instead of going to Las Vegas or someplace else, why do I go to Branson? Well, hold your horses. Before you do that, you might want to stay tuned to closer towards the end of the podcast when he does talk about that information and why you might want to reconsider moving to Branson and some of the obstacles that he had to overcome. And anyhow, this is a fascinating episode on so many different levels. And he is, again, a fascinating individual as well as an exciting entertainer and an act I highly recommend that you get a chance to go and see. So please welcome my guest this week, Reza, here on The Magic Word. Today, we are in the Branson Famous Theater in Branson, Missouri, and we are here with the person who is the star in the theater, Mr. Reza. Hey there, Reza. How are you this afternoon, this evening, this morning, whatever time of day it is, wherever you're listening? How are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very much. I certainly enjoyed the show. It was great seeing everything that you had to do and to offer. I think I heard you say that you've been here for 6 years in this theater. Is that right?
Yeah. It's my, I think, third theater since I came to Branson. And this one, yeah, 6 years. But it doesn't feel like that. But yeah.
Speaking of that, it's interesting. It's the third theater. I know there are so many other competitor types of shows that are going on. I mean, the Bald Knobbers are here, and that's, is that right? That's one of the oldest type of, I mean, there were a lot of gospel and singing groups, and like, I don't know, the Righteous Brothers, I guess. I don't
like
know.
The Blackwood Brothers are here.
There you go.
The Righteous probably Brothers have been here. Branson, I don't know all the stats factually, but I've heard some pretty impressive ones that Branson has more theater seats than Broadway or Vegas. They're very large theaters too. Some of them are 1,000 and 2,000 and 3,000 seats, which is unusual for theaters in this area. And it draws all types of shows and people. You've got some of the originals that you mentioned, that music, the ones that established Branson, like the Presleys and the Ball Knobbers and the style of comedy, and then you've got A-list headliners that come to town and everything in between. So there's a lot. I think there's 150 or 170, depending on the moment.
Holy moly.
Different shows in this town.
Yeah, that's amazing. Running the gamut of everything, as you were saying, and all the kinds of things. I typically think of Branson as being the Las Vegas for the retired group, the geriatric group, my group, because there's no casinos or anything here, but they do have the shows and the food, not so much the drink. There's not a lot of nightclub, or there isn't any nightclub activity or anything like that here. It seems like this is a family place for young children and older people, but kind of in between, there's not a lot to do.
It's very transitional. Yeah, Branson goes to sleep early. The town kind of closes down after an evening show. But years ago, like in the 90s, Branson was attracting mostly the tour bus groups of the older demographic coming to town. Now Branson has shifted a little bit to where their kids and grandkids are coming. And that demographic is looking for something a little bit different than the previous demographic they came with. And so there's been a shift where you still have some of those old shows, but you have a lot of new ones as well. Kind of bringing more youth to the town. So it's in this transition phase. Also, there's a lot of attractions here. There's tons of zip lines and miniature golf and a theme park. So there's a lot going on here. But there's 7 million visitors that come to this little town, per year.
Wow.
Yeah, 7 million. But it's located right in the center of the country, essentially. So you can pull a one-day drive from anywhere from Chicago to Dallas, and pretty much, I don't know, a good majority of the country can get here quite easily.
As we were talking earlier, someone had asked you about why here versus Vegas, and I thought you had a very good answer, if you don't mind sharing why you're...
Yeah, for me, so I've been touring for most of my career.
And you're how old now?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Or maybe we won't. We don't know. Hard to say. So when I started, I'm originally from South Dakota. Very, very isolated. So if we'd book a show in New York or Texas or wherever, it's a long trip from South Dakota. And so once I came here, I realized the same thing that feeds Branson with people easily can get here allowed me to also travel from Branson to people and be able to get around. So that made sense. The area is beautiful. So for me, I really enjoy like the work-life balance. I have a home here that's 6, 7, 8 minutes from the theater. I can leave right before the show.
On the water,
get here.
On the lake.
On the lake, very peaceful, just kind of the yin-yang of what we have here, with which is like a rock concert show and energy, and you get all that. But then to have that balance where I can go and just kind of sit on the deck and rejuvenate.
Do you have a home like that? In other words, is your home kind of rock and roll, or are you more jazz and laid back at
home?
It's
very tranquil.
Very tranquil, okay.
Yeah.
Very Spartan? You don't have a lot of things on the walls? Or what kind of art do you like?
There's very little on the walls. It's very tall ceilings, big glass windows, white open space, just peaceful. The deck off the master bedroom, I can go there and just look at the lake. And so it's more of that than like a busy home, because I kind of need that balance. I find right now we're in the middle of March through August, no days off. Seven days a week, shows every single day.
And it's either at 2 or 8, or what are your show times?
Yeah, it's one or the other. Okay. So it does alternate, and I'm not doing 2 shows in a day, which I have done different points in my career, and that is exhausting.
I would imagine.
But it's still every single day. And
it's a pretty physical show that you do.
There's a lot going on, and if you have a little injury, a little sprain, the body doesn't have a chance or day off to heal. So that's why I really like being able to, rather than go and climb into a tour bus or try and catch a flight or leaving the stage and traveling instantly or going to a hotel, being able to go home every night is just an amazing thing. So I really appreciate that about this town.
And when you are going on a tour bus and going out on tour, are these like corporate events, or are you booked on tour to work theaters, or what kind of shows or combination?
I mean, throughout my career, all of the above.
Yeah.
Right now, it's mostly performing arts centers and casinos.
Okay.
That we'll go out and do.
And so you have an agent or a promotion company that kind of books these tours for you? And where can people find that, I guess, to know where you're going to be if you're coming to a town near them?
Yeah. So our dates are all on our website, raisealive.com. We've got an agency in the performing arts market.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of manage that. And then one in the casino market. And they do their thing very well. And so the difficult thing is getting shows to route. Of course, like any touring show where you go out and you want to do night after night on the way to and from where you're going.
Sure.
Rather than doing the Star of David tour where you're here and there all over the place. But
exactly.
We've done it all, though.
So many things to unpack we've already just talked about. But going back to your home, I was just thinking about when Penn Jillette says, like in his home and in his dressing room, that he's got some things that are signed, like from the lyrics from Bob Dylan or whomever. I mean, there are different things that have to do with music. It's nothing to do with magic, but you wouldn't even know he was a magician by looking at his dressing room or his home.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have things that you like or you collect magic-wise, or do you try to disassociate yourself from magic and magicians when you are in your downtime?
No, I have that space, but it's isolated. Downstairs, I have kind of a magic lair where I've got all the props.
That's your Batman cave, huh?
Yeah. Kind of categorized and indexed so I can find things very easily, whether it's the prop I used a year ago or 10 years ago. And so I have that and kind of a theater room as well where, you know, if I want to watch something that someone sends me, I can see it large format. But then you'll go to another part of the home, and like you say, you won't even be able to tell what I do for 90% of my life, my existence, where my brain is working, you know. But I need that 10% to just kind of rejuvenate. And so, yeah, if you were to walk through my home, you wouldn't see magic posters. You wouldn't see memorabilia. You wouldn't see any of that. I respect those that keep all that stuff around. In fact, when you look around this area right here, which is my green room backstage, this is an area where I keep all that. So I know people who are listening can't see it, but there's fan art around, things that people bring. There's posters of
Thurston Keller. And Keller,
Thurston, you know, where things came from.
The heroes of yours in particular, or do you just like the poster or the art?
I like the vibe. Like this one's very chaotic. There's a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
The Keller, you know, these are very common magic posters.
Right.
You know, the Levitation's very simplistic. It just tells a very simple, plain story. And then I also keep things around here, like the old clothes that I used to wear when I was a kid performing some of the old tricks. The reason why I have that here versus like in a closet or storage or whatever is I really like walking past this. This is my little journey from my dressing room to the stage. And
to remind you who you are and where you came from.
Well, to remind me what that was like to be in that seat, that 6 or 7 year old kid, so excited to see the show. I remember being, you know, in Kirby Van Burch's audience, waiting for that curtain to open. My heart felt like it was going to jump out of my chest. It was a feeling I've never experienced at that point in my life, being that excited for something. And when you do it every single day, you've been doing it for as long as I have and others have, it goes away a little bit every night, unless you keep that reminder. And I want to give that 6-year-old or 7-year-old in the audience or whoever the show that I would have wanted to have seen. And so this allows me to kind of take that journey down memory lane. And when I get to the bottom of those stairs and the stage, I feel like I'm able to produce a better show than if I didn't have that reminder.
That's kind of like when I see the poster of Thurston, thinking about what you were saying there, Reza, as far as looking behind the curtain and looking at people saying, I love you, and you know, and that how he would build himself up a little bit, saying how that he loves the audience. So when he comes out, if you love them, they're going to love you back, I guess. And it's kind of like you are building this up. So when the curtain's open, boom, you're ready to go and you love that audience and you want to give them the best show, as you said, to make sure that every 6 or 7 year old who's sitting in the seat will ultimately have that experience you had.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you never know what's going to stick with people. And
you
what
don't.
You do on this stage this night, someone might remember the rest of their life.
You had, during the show, Max Farrell. What was it? Max
Fleet,
yeah. And that was just a great video that you were showing of like 10 years ago, I guess, when he was 10 years old, looked like, or something, in which he was so excited to get
Wasn't
to see Raise the Show. And then you say, and here he is now, he's 18 or whatever. How old is he? Looks like he's about 17.
18. Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I'm stepping on. Tell the story about how that came about.
So this video, if you've seen the show for the last 7 years, I think, you'll have seen this video. It's opened the show.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't seen it, it's worth YouTubing. I had to figure out what it's even called. I think just Reza Fan Surprise.
Yeah.
Google that, you'll find it. This kid came to the show, but...
And that was all genuine reaction.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But he got surprised with the ticket. So his sister pulled him up. I was in a different town than they live, and he didn't know I was close by. And his sister pulled him up and allowed him to see that the sign said sold out. And the kid got so excited because he saw that I was there, and then the next moment saw, but it sold out. So he was like, oh, I get to see the show tonight, and it sold out. And he just got very emotional. Mm-hmm. And his sister had already bought tickets and surprised him, brought the tickets out and said, I've surprised you. This is why we're here. I made up a story about leaving your jacket or here. So, you know, just whatever.
Yeah.
And there's just such a genuine, authentic moment. The kid starts to cry, but it's joy. And people send me videos of, you know, their kids, you know, excited for the show or after the show. This one was different. This one was special. There is something just behind the emotion. And so I've used it to start my show. So fast forward to now, and someone had sent me that video that was just a mutual friend, someone that I had known and knew the kid. I got permission to use it. I sent him a little gift packet. He was gracious. He came to the show several times. And I even asked permission before. Is it cool if we play this video? I just love the video. This kid ended up pursuing magic. So this whole entire time, he wants to be a magician. And now he graduated. And I thought, what better opportunity than one that I was given myself? I had the opportunity to come intern with different performers, and it changed my life. So I invited him, and now I get to play this video and then introduce him, and the audience sees this kid 7 years later walking on stage as an adult, and now getting to display the talents that he's been inspired to do at the show.
Right.
It's just this whole full circle thing.
It is.
I couldn't write or create something more
touching. I've never seen anything like that quite in anyone's show. And I don't know how long that this is going to last. As we're talking about this and people are listening to this, you know, 5 or 10 years in the future, I don't suspect you're going to be having a parade of kids who are going to be, now here's somebody else, and, you know, here's the next junior or whatever. It could happen, but this is just an amazing moment.
It is. Yes. It's just real life. It's something
True.
That you couldn't design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. As far as creating things, going back to your home of Zen,
you
go back and relax, do you find your muse in looking out the window, or are there certain things that just hit you as you're maybe at the coffee shop or when you're doing a show, you think, hey, what if I did this or whatever? A lot of things that you create, like we were talking about earlier, where you have the paint colors that match whatever, and it's not the method that many magicians think, it's your own personal method that you had created.
Yeah.
When you come up with these ideas, how do you think laterally? What is it that inspires you?
My process, well, first of all, if I sit down with a notepad and say, all right, come on, create something, it'll never happen.
That white paper is going to stay white.
Yeah, that's for me. I can't sit down and create because I tell myself to. My process usually begins with an object, and I have found personally that what works for my brand is organic.
Mm-hmm.
Objects that people have, know of, see, or wish to have are what I use in the show. So it's spray paint, power tools, even the largest illusions, helicopter. But the more original ones, like where I make people from the audience vanish, I don't do it in a sparkly box.
It's a big old cargo shipping container. That was very cool.
People
never seen that before.
You know what
Great
that
idea.
Is, and
yeah.
And what it's made of. And so it makes the magic, I think, more authentic or impactful because people are aware of what these items are. And there's also, I think, an underlying thing of they're more unassuming. They're probably legitimate because they've seen that on the back of a semi truck. And
sure.
It's something. So it's not a magic prop that got built
things.
In a laboratory or in their minds. So that's the process. I go, okay, I look around, I see objects that are cool or unique, and I say, what trick, even from my magic kit, which my kit from a kid is sitting right over there, and that's the reason why.
It's a Phantasma magic kit, is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I look at that, and I go, what trick has been done with a different prop, and how can I do that now with this object? And so that's kind of the process that I take. And it's not easy because we have to build many prototypes and many models to bring those things to life with another type of object. The piano, for example, I want to do something with the piano, the way that you can make it appear, but then also be able to play it and just have another dimension to that. Not just appear, but whatever you do with it. And so I have, I think, 5 or 6 different pianos built in my warehouse. They've never been seen by an audience because it hasn't been fully developed. It's a challenge of mine. I want to do something unique and different.
Not necessarily just the floating thing from the Goldstone Lock books. You want to do something.
I want to take that and I want to do something that no one has ever done. Similar to like the levitation concept that I was sharing with you earlier during the meet and greet. I won't go into the whole thing now, but no one's ever done anything like that before.
No, but I like your concept of where you're wanting to go with it.
Yeah. But everyone's seen levitation.
Sure.
But there's just, it's such a narrow scope of what's been done. A person floats, maybe there's a convincer, they come back down. There's been some very beautiful illusions. I mean, when you say levitation, there's probably 2 or 3 that come to mind.
Yep.
But
yep.
Still, there aren't a lot of different layers that have been built into it other than convincers. So it's like, what can you do to make it more, but also, is it possible to make it unexpected so people don't see it coming? Oh, here, she's going to levitate now. Is it possible to flip that on its head? So, yeah, that's kind of how my brain works.
And that's interesting. And I also love the fact that you make it feel that your show is organic from the standpoint where you come and sit on the edge of the stage and say, okay, you've seen some magic. Now, what do you guys want to see?
I do requests. It keeps me on my toes every night.
Requests is amazing.
Well, I figured I've developed...
There are certain things, obviously, people are always going to say. Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of get to know the audiences a little bit. And
that's a dangerous thing, though, I would think.
It is, because once you challenge the audience like that, there's no going back.
No.
Once you open the door.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah. So we've got a semi-trailer on the side of the building with just various props ready to go.
Yeah.
And if they say something that I've done even 5 years ago, I'll have my crew during the intermission get something out to be able to bring it to life.
Yeah.
If people have said different things that I've never personally done.
I was about to say, what's the most weird thing that people say do? Or we want to see?
Well, like the other night, someone said, can you bend metal? And I've never done that before.
You mean like,
like a fork and all that? Yeah, okay. They wanted to see that.
I've never
done it, but I'm aware of the methods. And so during the intermission, I got the silverware drawer.
Yeah.
And I practiced it, and I did it in the show that night.
Very cool.
And it went really well.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that you can assume might be said. The craziest one, maybe not, depending on how you look at it, is the rabbit.
Yes.
People will say many times, pull a rabbit out of a hat.
Yeah.
What's crazy about that is how many people have seen that? Not very many. I can't think of... I mean,
just pictures. That's what you visualize as a magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat. But in reality, very few... I don't care if you're a birthday party magician or a stage magician or anybody in between or whatever. Nobody does that. Very few magicians, I say, would do that.
Yet that's what people have
in remember.
Mind.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so because of that, we've gotten rabbits. So if someone says that, we're prepared and we'll do that.
Which happened to be the case this evening. You know,
we did.
Said that.
We got a rabbit and there is a rabbit in a unique way.
In a very unique way, I thought. Have you ever gotten some requests and thinking, that's an idea, we'll get back to you, and then you kind of put that in that razor box?
Yes. That's that board right over there. It says ideas.
Oh.
If I ever get challenged,
ideas.
I can't do it. It goes on that board, and I don't rest until I figure out a way to bring that to life, if I feel like that's going to be said again.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm ready.
Huh. That's interesting, because I think it would be an idea where you might build something then later. For an example, the guy was saying, 237 pounds, can you make me float? Well, you might come back in a few weeks, someone else say, can you make me float? Come on up here then, and you've got a method. Did you make them float, kind of a thing.
Or you have a joke for it or a
true
a way to use that moment.
So. Yeah. If you could just lose another 15 pounds, sorry, you're just off. You missed it by one, off by one. You know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I love that moment because it's never the same,
mm-hmm.
and it makes me work hard.
Now, leading up to this, you said you were on tour and you've done a lot of other things and everything. There was obviously a moment where this opportunity came about and you were able to work in this theater. But leading up to that, I mean, from South Dakota to Branson or Vegas or wherever it's going to be, I mean, we have just met. So 80% of the people I talk with are friends I know and for a long time, and I kind of have a general idea, but I don't know a lot about your background. How did you get started as far as moving from South Dakota to where we are?
Well, I was lucky enough to get some incredible mentors that mm-hmm. performed here.
Like Kirby, you were saying?
Kirby. Rock star mm-hmm. Of magic. It was around the time where I'd seen him on World's Greatest Magic, mm-hmm. along with a performer named Dave Hamner.
Sure.
Extremely accomplished, known mostly for the Bird Act mm-hmm. and several original illusions. And so I was aware of all that. I wrote letters to both of them and I said, is it possible to meet you?
Hmm.
And they both agreed. They had someone meet me at a backstage door and bring me and my family backstage, took time to talk with me, asked me what I was working on. I showed them, gave me advice, gave me pointers. So that was instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was reading magic and books to learn it. And this is a little before YouTube. It's a little easier now.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case. And I had a hard time reading things, understanding things as well as I would have needed to make that happens, especially sleight of hand things, to see a back palm in person rather than seeing mm-hmm. a diagram in a book. That's mm-hmm. what changed it for
obviously
me.
This is long before YouTube, of course.
It was before YouTube. Yeah. Okay. I won't say how long. I know where you're going with this.
No, I'm not going to ask.
No. Yeah. So that's what brought me to Branson originally. And that's what made me keep coming back, here over time. Mm-hmm. And then I met a gentleman who was opening for Kirby. His name is Jim Barber and he's a ventriloquist. But prior to his ventriloquism career, he was a magician mm-hmm. as a kid. And we got to talking. I was waiting in line to meet Kirby. And Jim said, where are you from? And I said, South Dakota. He said, me too.
Wow.
We connected. And he said, you're a magician. I said, yeah. He said, I was as well. Connected again. And he said, I got some props. They're in storage at my parents' back in South Dakota. And they're just taking up space. And I was just a kid. I had, at that point, every trick that you could find in a magic shop. I mean, the top shelf ones, like the right. little box that did this and that. Not a big illusion. He said, go and pick them up. They are yours. And he gifted me a mismade illusion, mismade lady, and a temple of Benares.
Benares, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a couple other things. All of a sudden, this young kid now had an illusion show.
But you didn't have any assistants or dancing girls?
I got them quick. Yeah.
Did you just have some girls or kids in school or you have a sister then or what?
No, I'm an only child.
Okay.
So I don't have the sister to put in the box or the brother to be a double.
Okay.
I had to get creative. But I was somehow, I don't know how, I was able to land the cutest girls in school mm-hmm. as my assistants.
And they so want to be on stage.
It gave me credibility.
Yeah.
I was nerdy.
Were you nerdy?
Not popular.
No sports.
I kept to myself. Well, I did play sports eventually. I played hockey and basketball and soccer, but it wasn't who I was. I enjoyed playing it, but I was like the magic kid. And so there wasn't a magic club. It was me by myself kind of working on that.
Not a lot of magicians in South Dakota.
Not a ton of them. No. In fact, I don't think any magician has made a name for themselves coming out of South Dakota.
Nor any brick and mortar magic shops either.
No magic shops. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I got a couple cute girls to be my assistant. And now all of a sudden people were turning their heads, taking notice.
And working shopping malls and things, or how'd you find work?
I would go around to small venues, VFWs, American Legions.
Good point. Good idea.
High school auditoriums, whatever I could rent.
Fraternal organizations.
Put up posters, call radio stations, do the whole bit. And then in a 1,000-seat auditorium, I'd have 50 people, maybe 70.
Mm-hmm.
I had to cultivate that. So I went same places. I just marked the calendar from a year down the road, went back, And then they told their friends, and so the crowd doubled and then tripled, and it was just that. So I kind of approached it like a band would a little bit, where just had to kind of hit the streets and promote with the flyers and everything.
Sure.
And then just kind of drive around town to town until something started clicking.
Did you, you mentioned radio stations. Did you do a lot of magic on the radio or anything in order to help promote through the radio?
I probably did a few things. I don't remember now what those were, but they do always want you to perform something on the radio, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Banachek and I put out Radio Magic many years ago. So if you have not familiar with it, that was...
Yeah, it's coming a few years too late.
Yeah.
But I will. Yeah. I'll dig into that. Banachek came to the show recently. What a great guy.
Yeah, he was my business partner, you know.
Okay, fantastic.
And so I'm glad he did. I thought that you had – did you travel for a short time also with Chris on his and Chris Angel with
Chris was very, very nice and kind and brought me out to Vegas to discuss – the Supernaturalist
project. Right, when Banachek was on there.
Yep, and so I got to know Banachek throughout that process.
And Kristen Lambert, I guess.
And Kristen, and I knew Kristen from way back because we did shows together.
Did you?
Me and Kristen and Dan Sperry and a couple others. We had a couple different versions of a
What a great show that show. Would be. Wow.
Yeah.
Dan Sperry and Kristen. Well,
it was us pretty early on.
Yeah. No, I can only imagine.
But it was fun.
Yeah, and also Spencer Horseman, I think, at the time.
Yep,
is that
Spencer
right?
was out there
the escape guy.
With me, in Vegas for the Chris Angel thing,
And so you did that for a while, or he was talking to you about it? It did or didn't happen?
We spent some time together talking about it. At the moment, I was tied up in contract.
Okay.
I was doing another project, and I didn't have the availability to do that specifically. But then, I mean... That was my first time working with Chris and Banachek.
Yeah.
So even though I wasn't able to do the show, it was such a cool experience seeing their process and the infrastructure that they've built.
Right.
So much more than you would imagine has to go into that, the scene shops and the fabrication and the merchandising. Yep. And so that was a really good experience for me.
Yeah, because I can see a lot of Chris in you, and I didn't know whether that might have been someone who had inspired you or just it happened that he is interested in the same kind of music that you are and has a similar kind of thing. And I was just in Las Vegas last week and I'm spending some time with Chris and saw Mystica and Mind Freak show, and he took me backstage and was showing me all of everything. But it had a rock concert kind of feel to it, which your show does. I'm not saying that you're copying his by any means. You have your own style and everything too, and things are not happening the same way with that. This is a different town, and as you're saying, the demographics are changing here, so it's not necessarily people who are remembering Andy Williams and Roy Rogers and the Letterman or whomever necessarily, or the Beatles. That they're starting to have a younger demographic that's coming who would more appreciate the kind of music that you got, and it's evidenced by having a sold out audience night after night too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think what Chris and I really connected on is we're both authentic to ourselves on and off stage. I wear what I would feel comfortable wearing if I wasn't on stage. The music, although it's harder, kind of, it was interesting because you wouldn't think that the music would appeal to as wide of a demographic, because there's a lot of pieces in the show that are like Linkin Park and something like that. But then I'll have an 80-year-old grandma come up to me and say, I love the music in the show. But I think it's just because it's connected to the magic and the whole experience. I don't think they would actually listen to that song. But they like it when it's all put together in that format.
Yeah.
But I think there's so many magicians that try to be someone else on stage. And it doesn't necessarily come across.
Good point.
And so, they dress how they think they should dress or the type of shirt a magician should wear, that kind of thing. And so I think that's where Chris and I really connect. Even though we do things much differently, I don't know if there's any trick necessarily that you can see in both of our shows, although I haven't seen his recently. I think the style of it, we definitely, we will I always respected him.
Sure.
But it was cool to hear some of the things that he said to me about some of the things that I was working on and doing. So I have just tons of respect for him.
As I said, there are some similarities, but more differences than there are similarities, which is great because people should see both shows and judge for yourself. But style-wise, as far as, yeah, some of the music and the fast pace of this, the videos, the lighting and everything, you know, that moves so quickly.
I'll give you an
example,
like something I was working on with Chris, who's having me do. At the end, he said, no, go kick that chair over. Huh. Go kick it over. I said, kick it over. He put a chair out. He said, yeah, kick this thing over.
Like it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It's not part of the prop or anything, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just it's a way, I guess, of creating a dramatic moment, but mm-hmm. also saying that there's nothing, there's nothing
gimmick
wrong
here.
with this chair. Mm-hmm. So I like how his process is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you would do something like that in your show?
I mean, I don't, but I remember that moment.
But that thought process, of the trying to apply some insignificance to something in an offhanded way.
Yeah.
And that, and as that example,
in that,
toward
exactly.
something, not necessarily a chair.
Yeah.
necessarily. We're going to take a brief moment for a commercial message from our sponsor this week, the New England Magic Collectors Association. Then we'll return back to our episode right after this message. I have with me now Mr. Michael Mayo, who is one of the organizers for the Yankee Gathering that's with the New England Magic Collectors Association. He is the vice president of the organization, and they're going to be having a fantastic convention that's coming up November the 3rd through the 5th of November there in Westboro, Massachusetts. Hey there, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing well today, Scott. How about yourself?
I'm doing great also. And I bet you're pretty excited about this being the first time in, 4 years of getting together?
Yes, we did the virtual convention during COVID. But boy, oh boy, we are excited to get back together in person this November.
And so tell me something that's going to be special about this particular convention. Who's your guest of honor?
Our guest of honor this year is none other than the legend himself, Mr. Jim Steinmeier.
Wow.
So we can't think of anybody more deserving than Jim. And, Jim's not only being honored, he's also speaking and doing an interview at this convention. And we all can't wait to have him there.
Wow. That's quite a coup to get him. I mean, he is Mr. History for sure. He has been there and done that and helped everybody. And wow, his name, of course, as you say, it is legendary. And so who are some of the other acts or lecturers that you have coming in?
We have 10 other lecturers also that are going to be doing talks. We have two shows culminating in our grand gala dinner on Saturday night. The performers are alone, or Mark D'Souza, Richard Hatch, Nick DeFat, David Garrity. It's really a packed weekend, and we're really looking forward to it.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And the hotel, tell me some information about that.
Yeah, it's at the DoubleTree Hotel in Westboro. It's only about 20 minutes outside of Boston. Extremely easy to get to. Public transportation. Buses are available. Get you right out next to the hotel. It's fairly easy to get there, and it's going to be a good time.
Sounds great. So, where will people go for more information? The website.
If you go to NEMCA.com, NEMCA.com, or you could find us on Facebook at the New England Magic Collectors Association on Facebook. You can drop ask any questions there. The admins will be happy to take care of you. And we're looking forward to seeing everybody this fall. It's going to be a great time.
I know that it will. And I encourage everybody to go over to NEMCA.com, look at the information, and register today. Thanks again, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
You bet. Good luck and have a great convention. Thank you, Mike, for that information about the Yankee Gathering coming up November the 3rd through the 5th. I encourage everyone again to go over to NEMCA.com and check them out. So going from, again, the touring, there was kind of a gap there. This is where you were moving from South Dakota to get here. And you said that you were on a tour bus before, or were you flying around, or when you were going
mostly
and doing some casinos?
I've always loved the idea of a tour bus. I couldn't always afford one. So my mm-hmm. first tour bus was an old school bus that mm-hmm. we gutted the inside so we can put some props in there. And then we painted the outside as much like a tour bus as we could. Mm-hmm. I rolled in that for a period of time. And then my next tour bus was Elvis's band's bus.
That's kind of cool.
Built the year Elvis passed away, and they had their own career after that. 77 MCI. Mm-hmm. That thing was first class in 77, but when I got it years later,
not quite
it was
so
a glorified much. Camper.
Yeah.
But it's, again, what I could afford at that moment.
Sure.
And so I rolled in that. So now I have a Prevost, with anybody would tour win in any capacity if you're an A-list musician or concert, mm-hmm. Going to concerts. And so that's cool, but I also respect the journey, and I know that isn't automatic to be able to travel like that. But yes, I really like the idea of traveling by bus over flying. I do fly when I need to, but everyone has their preferences, and that's mine.
You can also carry a lot more things, I would think, on a bus than you could in a plane.
Yep.
As far as props go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you can have and can you get everything on the bus? Or I assume that you've got like another tractor trailer behind you.
I wish, and I have a lot of respect for people who have figured that out. Yeah.
Have you talked to David Copperfield about
that? I've never
been
able to travel light. David, I think traveled with like 5 or 6 semis.
Yeah.
I travel with like 1 or 2 trucks.
Because after he was finished with the show, they're kind of packing up and kind of taking off while he's getting ready to get in the
well-oiled machine.
Yeah, very well-oiled machine.
Incredible.
Going from one place to the next back
every
when he was on the road.
Detail accounted for, yeah.
Yeah. And do you, as you are doing each of these shows, I suspect like with David as well, it's kind of like I see a little thing here that can be improved for the next show. And so
yes.
He makes sure. Do you make notes afterwards? I mean, I've been backstage with Chris afterwards, from which he's got a couple people come in and they've got notepads, and he says, okay, we need to make sure this, this, and this, you know, afterwards. And
yes, I've got different points in the show where I've got 5 or 10 seconds off mic, mm-hmm. and I'm notating things to the crew, and then
yep.
it goes on a dry erase board on the side of the stage. I know David, and this is always fascinating to me, how he has 2 microphones and he's able to
turn one off.
Yep, and talk to the crew.
Say, turn this sword the other way the next time the handle goes
exactly
this way, whatever. Yeah,
yeah. And you look at that and you're like, why would you have to do that? But it is the case. When you're on stage, your brain is thinking so many steps ahead,
mm-hmm.
that you realize something. Oh, this light is not in the right position. This needs to be adjusted. But 5 seconds later, you're on to something else and you go, wait, I had that note. What was that? You cannot remember it. So I've created these moments in the show, not where I have another microphone like David does, which is very ingenious, but mm-hmm. where I have to tell these notes to people. And then I also film every show.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I go home and watch the entire thing, but I'll also notate different things to watch. And yeah, even something that's been the show for many years, I'll go, I need to reanalyze that. And I'll also watch, or I'll film the audience, and I'll combine those two into one where I can see the show on the left and the audience on the right. And I'll look at how the audience is responding or feeling to different things.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just applause? Are they just reacting because they should?
Yeah.
Or are they feeling something? Is there an expression on their face that tells me that there's a deeper emotion or meaning to something?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. So this way that you can play on that the next time, it's like, oh, they're connecting at this level. Maybe I should play and add another line there or something.
Yeah, and it's mm-hmm. like what draws the largest responses, and
mm-hmm.
those things, as you saw probably tonight, are not necessarily the biggest, most massive props.
Mm-hmm.
There's things
like that lady who's, I've forgotten the name of the trick, of reaching in and feeling something. I mean, the response.
Oh, did you hear her scream?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I wish we could have taken pictures because I knew that was coming. I mean, I've seen that, but oh, yeah. Her expression and her scream was authentic.
And there's no way the largest prop that I have on stage could garner.
Elicit that kind of emotion response.
Right? Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Be honest with me on this. Have you or do you still get any kind of butterflies whenever you're getting ready to go on stage? I mean, just before that, you have everything and you know what's going to be happening. You know the order and everything and the show is all ready. And before the curtains part and they're announcing your name, do you have butterflies?
I don't.
Okay.
And that's just me. I heard that Johnny Carson
heard
the same nerves.
Yeah.
The last show is the first show. So I don't think that it's just any performer that does it enough times, it goes away. But for me personally, I'm able to somehow flip that switch.
Hmm.
I don't have to think about the show until I'm on stage. And this is if the show is all, if we're adding something new, or that's different. But once the show is in its current state and we're rolling with it, I used to come in and do presets for an hour and all that. Mm-hmm. I've been very lucky. I have a crew that some of the crew has been with me for a decade or more. Oh. And so people I really, really trust. And so they take care of everything and I trust them too. And it allows me to walk in the building. This is not something that's probably good or proud of at all. But since this is an authentic podcast of what really goes on,
right.
I walk in the building typically, if it's 8 o'clock show, I walk in typically at 8:01 or 8:02 because there is a MC that comes out for 2 minutes mm-hmm. and the intro video plays. And I'll sometimes come in here half an hour early, and that doesn't put me any quicker to get ready. I don't know what it is.
I know what you're saying. As I said, just last week when I was with Chris and we were watching a Mystica. No, it was for Mind Freak, for his show. He was going to be on stage. And we're backstage, and the show's supposed to start, I think it was 8 o'clock. And it was like 8:05 and 8:10, and we're still sitting back there and having a drink. He wasn't, but the rest of us were.
Yeah.
And we're watching the video, watching. It's like somebody's out there talking, and they're inspecting the straitjackets and showing this video. And I said, should we be out there and get ready? Oh, we'll be out in a minute. And so it's like what you're saying. It's like instead of being on the edge of the curtain and ready to go, it's like I know what time I'm supposed to be there. I'm fine. And he just kind of jets out and he's ready to go and boom,
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
I know some performers have the routine where it's like an hour countdown or half an hour countdown. They start mm-hmm. doing this or that. And for me, it's just I throw my clothes on and I get the microphone situated and I've got a couple of things just to secure it to myself for the show. And that's my preset. I walk on the stage and the energy of the crowd in that first moment kind of snaps me into position.
Yes.
And that's the first time that I'm
fully aware
of what's happening. And I know what's happening, what's going to be happening, but I could be having a terrible day or a stressful day. It doesn't matter. When that moment hits, it resets me. And by the end of the show, if I've been in a terrible mood, I'm in a great mood.
Yeah, all of a sudden, right.
It's just a total reset.
Are there any things that happen or have happened that kind of jar you, perhaps that were unexpected? Perhaps like you were talking about, like you got the green, yellow, or orange and red light or something, and so you have to kill some time.
Yeah, so that's what we use. I know some performers wear earpieces mm-hmm. or do different things. I haven't been comfortable doing that. I also don't want anything in my ear to where people could justify how I'm accomplishing something.
Oh.
So in the back of the room, I have a light that goes that's green, yellow, or red, just one that I can see. And so if they need more time, the show is very stacked in terms of not a lot of time between things. Mm-hmm. I don't like the style of let's drop the mid down and then stall for 6 minutes while they set the next thing up and then mid opens and the whole show is just in front of or behind the mid, the mid. I try and keep the curtain and the stage open as much as possible mm-hmm. and keep moving. Even if we just came off of a big trick, I want to be able to do another big one within like 40 seconds.
Right.
That's
why you got a good crew working back there and moving things in and out.
Like the motorcycle, we open with the motorcycle.
It's a great opening.
And I come forward and basically just say hello to the audience. And then before anything else happens, the curtain's open. And that whole prop, which is like six different set pieces, has now been changed over. And there's a new prop on stage. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's important. But because of that style, if any little thing goes wrong, we have to account for that. Time-wise, it's like dominoes. Like once we start, it goes. And so that's my pacing. If that light goes orange or red, I know the degree that I have to stall and mm-hmm. and take more time. And so I have things built in to where I can give them time to set things correctly or reset things correctly or something's broken to fix
it. Has something been broken beyond repair such that the red light, at some point you're thinking, okay, this is a serious thing. Maybe we're going to have to go to something else. And does anyone ever come to you and said, hey, we need to change something?
Yeah, it's very rare. But
I would imagine.
I do have a couple of things prepared that I would never go to unless we needed to. And mm-hmm. they're right on the front of the stage for me to be able to do that. Or sometimes I'll do the Q&A or the request section early or just kind of have fun with the crowd.
Right.
So those things have happened, but they're so rare that I can't even remember the last time that it has.
It's fairly tightly scripted, it sounds like. So you're kind of down to the minute.
Yeah. And we also have a smaller crew. I used to have larger, and I've learned, at least for me, that's better to have less people that really know what they're doing than more that can get in the way of things happening backstage.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the worst injuries when there's been extra people.
So how many people do you have on your crew currently?
I have 8.
Okay. Now, that's on your immediate crew, and then you have also the light and sound people, or are you including those as well?
That's my staff, so that just wouldn't include the venue staff in terms of the ushers.
Because that's a venue. Gotcha. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but the stage assistants, technicians, and management, and
your front
of house. Yeah. Yeah, 8 people.
Okay. These are all full-time employees.
Full-time employees, yeah, salaried employees that dedicate their time.
Their life to you.
Their life, their time. Just
you're responsible for those people to eat and breathe every day.
It is, yeah. But just 8.
Yeah.
Just 8, yeah.
Okay. Do you look or hope to expand to have a much larger show? I mean, this is a heck of a large show. It's a big theater. How many, by the way, I was going to say, 1,200-seat theater or something?
Okay. Yes.
There are not a lot of other larger venues. Rick Thomas has got the Moon River Theater, that's a 2,000-seat theater, I guess, and that's probably the biggest in town. But
yes.
I suspect that you're satisfied here and don't plan to move anytime soon.
All paths just kind of keep leading back when we've looked at other options to move either to a larger room. I love the energy of a full sold-out audience.
Sure, of course.
And so to be able to sell out 1,200 seats every single night, I'd prefer than needing 3,000 or 2,000 seats sometimes.
Gotcha.
But then having it half empty.
Exactly.
Or worse, the rest of the time. Also, the capabilities of the theater are a little bit limited in this town. Not a lot of them have fly systems and wing space and the depth that we need to produce a show like this. So there's a lot of things that we have to consider, not just the number of seats, but the location. Branson is also a very difficult town to establish in. You don't want to move around too much.
Okay, because?
Because there's so much going on here that it's hard to educate people when they come to town.
So tourists are used to coming to your show and they want to come back again next year, and if they can't find you because...
There's so many billboards, so many shows, so much happening that to get your message across that you've moved and get to everybody is very, very difficult.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And that was one of the points I wanted to get to, if you can talk about that a bit. This is different from Las Vegas from the standpoint, the 4-wall shows there, and some 2-wall casinos might pay part. And this is a different kind of a thing in which I remember talking to David Sandy when he was working with Tom Mullica, and he also had an Elvis impersonator and I think the Haygoods. But you pretty much had to have a breakfast, lunch, and dinner kind of a thing in a lot of theaters, particularly the smaller ones, maybe not this one, where something's going on all the time to try to make money because there is so much competition. You're trying to get as many patrons in the door to watch whatever that happens to be that variety.
There is, yeah. I would never come to Branson today again to start off with.
Well, no, that's what I was getting to. I was wondering whether you would encourage people to say, should they come out from Vegas and maybe try to start their own show here? Or it's like, good luck. It's tough. What would you say?
Oh, it's very, very tough. I would never, like I said, I would never have done this again. I got really lucky. The way that I was able to establish here was I first came in with Brett Daniels.
Yeah.
He produced a show called Revolutionists, which is an ensemble concept. And he sold the show to an investor here with me kind of as the focal point of the artwork. And he had my heroes kind of growing up around me, Jeff McBride and others from World's Greatest Magic. I'm trying to remember who, Kevin James on the poster, and of course himself. And he sold the concept. And then after it got interest, he called me and said, I've got you kind of on this artwork and I'd love you to be a part of the show. And I couldn't say no to it. Even though I had a very full touring schedule that summer, I rearranged everything and I put time to come be a part of this project. It was just an honor to be asked to do it. And that show ran, I think, 2 seasons, but
And the season here, again, you said is March to August, through August?
It's getting shorter. The off season is getting shorter and shorter. Pretty much just January down.
Okay.
Here. But I did two years with that, and then people kind of knew who I was at that point before I had gone off on my own.
Okay.
They say it takes at least 3 years to make it here. You have to lose money for 3 years.
Wow.
Well, I was a part of that project for long enough, people knew who I was. So then after that, I got what's very rare in this town, a guarantee. Here you go. We're going to write you a check.
Yes.
For another venue that was very, very well established, and they brought my full show to that theater, and they presented it. And they already understood the town, how it worked.
And they knew that how to put the butts in the seats.
They knew it. Mm-hmm. They knew the machine. I didn't have to learn it.
Yeah.
And
you just did your show.
Did a season there.
Man, how lucky were you?
I mean, for those two things, those were stars aligning that most people have to come to town, invest their own money or someone else's, lose it. The town, I'm kind of dodging all over here.
And find a theater.
Find a theater. Find the slot. It's insane. The town is run in a unique way in that timeshare. Mm-hmm. Is really the motivating factor,
right?
Both for people to come here
because they get free shows for going through a timeshare presentation.
Or they can be staying in a resort and the resort sells them their tickets.
Yeah,
it's hard to get somebody to just come to town, see a billboard, and then pull up to your theater and buy a ticket. They've probably been influenced by someone else in this town to go to a specific show.
Okay,
so you don't have to just take over the billboards. You have to educate every single person in this town, every ticket seller, every valet guy, every waiter, every waitress, everybody to know and love your show. And that just takes so much time. And the ticket sellers here, they won't even sell your tickets until you've been established for long periods of time because they don't want to sell a ticket to a show that might be closed, which happens. It's a revolving door. So anyway, after I'd worked so hard to figure this town out, I didn't want to go anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
But I finally got out on my own, and with that launching pad, I was able to be successful. But if I had to produce or make another show successful today, it would turn my hair gray. It would be such a challenge. And you've seen probably acts or shows come from Vegas or other places that have been successful or on Broadway. And then it comes to Branson and then it just fizzles out. And that's what happens here. It's a revolving door. There's a few who've been successful, but the odds of it are very small.
I thought perhaps it had a lot to do with, the demographic. You have to know who it is your potential market, because you can market all that you want and put up cab backs. Well, they don't have the cab backs here, the way. I mean, they don't have a lot of cabs even in downtown.
No.
Certainly not like Vegas.
Nope.
Or the traveling billboards like I've got in Vegas or whatever, driving up and down the street. But they do have rack cards, you know, and of course the billboards, as you said, and the ticket sellers. There's a lot more ticket sellers and all that here than there are in Vegas. There are different ways of marketing here. And if you don't understand that machine, I understand that. You're not going to be as successful. So it would be trying to learn a new way of marketing if you had learned the Vegas way of marketing.
Yes.
Sounds like.
Yes. This is unlike any other market or town. Yeah.
And it's changing from what you were saying. And I think that is really an interesting comment as far as there is a younger demographic that is coming now.
Yes.
And I guess those are probably the kids of the parents.
It is.
Yeah.
Now they're bringing their kids.
But
they want to see something different.
Oh. They don't want to just go to Silver Dollar City necessarily.
Well, they might want to go there. Yeah. That's something that everybody seems to want to do. But the entertainment that they saw with their family when they came here doesn't necessarily resonate probably with what they want to see with their kids. So you've got the shows that were here that are still wearing the same outfits and sequence clothes and the same everything from that period of time.
You're talking about like the singing Mormon family.
I'm not talking about anyone in particular.
No. I know you're not, but I'm just saying there are a lot of those singing family
there
shows.
There are those shows, that haven't figured out how to change.
Gospel breakfast and things like that.
Yeah.
You think those days are numbered?
I mean, if you were to count the number of people in
their shows?
Yeah. Mm. In the seats. Mm. You might have more people on the stage than in the seats in some
That's
of them.
Not good.
Possibly.
Huh. And so obviously you think those days are numbered because they can't justify staying open, I would think, for a while like that.
Yeah.
I know that during COVID, at least in Las Vegas, and I suspect the same thing here, the government had given millions of dollars to keep and encourage investments in order to bring tourism back to yes. the tourist spaces. And so a lot of shows opened in late COVID that were funded by the government. Were there many shows here that you know of or that got COVID money?
Yes. Yeah. That definitely kept shows afloat that otherwise wouldn't have survived.
And do you think after the money dries up, some of those might dry up?
I predict that they will.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they had the funding, but not the audience.
Yeah. I mean, there's two possibilities, and that's let it fizzle out or reinvent it.
Yeah.
And some are doing that. Some are revitalizing their brands. And some are not. But, yeah, you can't just continue to do the same thing. There's also a good number of people that come back to see shows here over and over and over. And if they see the same things, they won't keep coming back.
But sometimes they want to see the same things. Like when I go to see Chicago play, I want to hear some of the stuff from their old album. Or you want to hear the Rolling Stones or, you know, some of the older groups, of course.
Yep.
You want to hear the songs that you grew up with. Likewise, they might have something as a touchstone from your show. It's like, I want to see that magic trunk again that he's going
to
do.
You have to find that recipe because you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. There's specific things, three or four or five things in my particular case that they expect to see.
Yes.
So I have to also reinvent those because magic is different than music. You don't want them singing along to what you're doing magic-wise, knowing the next move.
Yeah.
So I'll sometimes change the method of a trick or I'll change enough about them that they can see it many times and get enough of what they want, but also
new
make
eyes.
It fresh. Mm-hmm. And then in my particular case, like if you go to a Backstreet Boys concert, you want to hear all their hits.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But magic, you got to keep a little bit of surprise. So I have to change about 60 to 70% of the show
per year,
year over year. Yeah.
Okay.
In order, in my opinion, keep audiences coming back. And so that in itself is quite a challenge to come up with that much new
material.
I would
think so. And so you were saying like it runs through August as far as the time right now. Is that right?
Or well, we're also touring. So even though the season here, like we'll do shows every single day until mid-August. Yeah.
Okay.
But then our first day off, I'm flying to New York to do three shows out there and then fly back here. So just because the show is dark here doesn't necessarily mean that I have the day off, which is another challenge.
Right. You don't have anybody that's going to be replacing you or anything, obviously, because you've got the Razor brand as opposed to something else that's a generic name that they can come in and plug and play.
Yes, exactly.
Right. When the time off, you do have off to come up with that 60% of ideas. Are you thinking of or looking at things throughout the year saying, I want to put this in to kind of work on this a little bit that you're going to put into next year's show?
Yeah. So I have a warehouse that's on the same property as my home.
Mm-hmm.
So I can walk out my door and be in the warehouse very quickly. So if I only have 15 or 20 minutes, mm-hmm. I can still make good use of that, go in the warehouse, put some things together, figure things out, and then we'll do maybe about 2 or 3 days a week. We'll do a rehearsal after the performance. And
right.
I'll bring whatever ideas I've come up with that week, and we'll put some music to it, and we'll see if it has anything to build off of. So that's the process, is basically we just take little bites out of the apple.
Do you have rehearsal place at your home or in your warehouse, or do you have everybody come down here and practice?
It starts at the warehouse, and
that's
once it gets
wondering.
Developed to a certain point, we'll then move it over to here.
Back over here and actually try it with the lights and sound and everything.
And put it in the same environment.
Because sometimes I would imagine it makes a big difference. You might do it over
at
the
warehouse. Oh, you learn things, yeah.
Yeah, and it looks good there. It's going over here, so, no, it doesn't work at all.
Now, all of a sudden, like the stage here is taller than a lot of stages, and
yeah,
you see
tall.
Things at that angle, and you see things that you didn't think about, or sometimes angles on the sides you anticipate, and then you get there and you look at the angle, and that's a little bit different.
A little bit more, yeah.
Got to reinvent that a little bit.
That's right. Got to move things around and make sure it works. Well, it's been great. Thanks. I'm getting to know you a lot better through this. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, so I always end liking. I want to know what it is that's your phrase. What is your philosophy of life?
Balance.
I like that. Okay. Balance in your life.
Yeah.
And you find balance. How?
I try to find balance. I think by
meditation.
Well, I have, yeah, meditation, self hypnosis, any of that, journaling. I think I need to get ideas out of my head onto something tangible so that I can rest easy. Mm-hmm. If I haven't put that somewhere, I have a certain amount of stress of not forgetting something. But once I have it, you know, out somewhere on an idea board, then it brings me that balance.
Great. Razor, this is great. Thanks very much. I had a great time talking with you.
Thank you for inviting me on.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Razor. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Reza, for taking the time after your show and for talking with us quite long into the night. By the time we left the theater, he was locking up behind himself. There were no people left in the whole building. I mean, everybody had left. I don't know what time that must have been, around probably close to 2 a.m. or something like that. Anyhow, thank you very much for taking the time that you did to talk with us about all those very interesting subjects, and I think the listeners are going to get a lot out of that. I know I certainly did, and it was great getting to know you there. And I look forward to coming back and seeing your show yet again, and perhaps if you come on tour, to see you live in a theater somewhere when you're near me. And I hope that the rest of your listeners will watch for him when he comes near you then as well. Now you know who Reza is. You can look for him, or you can go to Branson and you can see his show live there, or you can watch some videos. Just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, where there you will also be able to watch some videos of his show then too, and see some photos. I also want to thank Mike Mayo very much for being part of this podcast and for NEMCA sponsoring this week's episode. And I want everyone to be sure to visit their website at NEMCA. That's NEMCA.com, NEMCA.com, for more information about the Yankee Gathering coming up on November the 3rd through the 5th in Westboro, Massachusetts. Be sure and check that out and register soon. The convention is right around the corner. If you'd like to help the Magic Word Podcast grow, and you use iTunes to listen to your podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and leave some nice comment, if you will. If you can't give us a 5-star rating, then hold off and don't give us any rating then at all, nor leave any comments until you've had a chance perhaps to listen to the podcast a little bit longer. Because I think after you've heard this for a while that you'll agree with the other 10,000 listeners that this is the best magic podcast out there on the internet today. So I thank all of you very much for listening. And if you can leave us a 5-star rating along with some nice comments, that will help our podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. And be sure to subscribe to our pod letter. Again, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, a little pop-up will tell you how to subscribe to that. So please join us each week so this way we can give you some information on who's coming up from week to week and also some suggestions from the archives. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to have balance in your lives. This is Scotty out.